Today we're going to talk about raising entrepreneurial kids. This topic might sound a little weird. It's not like we're expecting our kids to go out and start businesses and make money before they reach junior high. But one of the things that we have found is that the values that drive the entrepreneurial life have been really important and helpful to us when we think about how we're parenting our children. So Rob and I have two sons. They are ages 4 and 8. And today we'd like to talk about the four core values of entrepreneurship and the way that those values have influenced our parenting strategies.
Yeah, we've broken it down into these four values of what becoming an entrepreneur is about. The first one is respecting your ingenuity and creativity. So it's around creating things. Second is being self-reliant, meaning that you're not relying on other folks to provide for you. Third is effectively using information to solve problems. So problem solving is a big aspect of that one. And the fourth is perseverance. It's not giving up. Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
Hi, my name is Finn Walling, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, A Parent's Guide to Minecraft. Minecraft is a creative building game that's not only fun, but teaches you architecture, survival skills, and teamwork. You can play on your PC, Mac, Xbox, iPad, or iPhone. If you're interested in learning more about Minecraft and how you can enjoy it with your kids, you should check out my book. Head over to finstravels.com and look for the picture of the cover on the right-hand side. The book is only $5 for PDF or $10 for paperback and PDF. That pretty much wraps it up. Goodbye.
That was our 8-year-old pitching his book that he wrote, A Parent's Guide to Minecraft. And he wrote it in a Google Doc, and I helped him edit it and clean it up. And then he did a small print run. He asked us to invest in him to fund the physical copies of the book, and ordered 25 copies. He's also selling via PDF. And so he and I put together a little website, and he's done well for himself. He's saving up some money for a big Lego set, and he's already paid back his investors. So I've been pretty impressed with his project. And you know, he has a little profit and loss Google spreadsheet that he and I keep up, and I give him payouts as new money comes in for sales.
So the first value that we want to talk about is creativity. And this is the idea that we'd like to help empower our children to be makers, that so much of life is enhanced when you have a belief in your own creative capacity. So, you know, we try to cultivate this in lots of ways in our family, encouraging our kids to make things, obviously to write a book, to tinker, to build, experiment, to create. It means that we spend a fortune on art supplies. Our 4-year-old has a deep love of scotch tape, and we just fill his stocking every year with scotch tape and pens and other art supplies.
I order them in bulk from Amazon. Like, I seriously think I've bought 40 rolls of scotch tape in the past year or two. And then I have packing tape and I have envelopes, and we are, you know, judicious and liberal with the amount that they are able to use. And I kind of haven't put a limit on that.
And like all children, when left to his own ideas, he makes some really great stuff. So he'll build a suit of armor for a stuffed animal and use scotch tape to tape it on. Or he'll decorate all the windows in our house with snowflakes or Valentine hearts or whatever the coming holiday is.
And when he's doing those things, I'm always tempted to say, don't do that, because later I'm going to have to clean that up and you're not going to, you know, take care of this, and it creates more work for me. But I've been trying to resist the urge to control everything and to keep my work to a minimum, right? That's not the goal as I'm raising kids, is to keep my work to a minimum. It's to raise these kids to be creative and to not feel like they are always being told, don't do that. I mean, I think that's our public school system's job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ba-do-boom. Sorry.
Whoops. Yeah. That's a different topic. But that does mean that we have a great tolerance for mess, whether that's mess in our house or mess outside, that it really brings our children so much joy to jump in there and get messy. They have painted their full bodies with finger paint, luckily outside where we could just hose them off. They definitely play in the mud. And obviously this isn't unique stuff to our children, but we have been very intentional about trying to give them as much creative license as and freedom as is reasonable and safe. Another one of the strategies that we try to be intentional about is creating things in front of our kids, doing our own art projects. I love to paint every now and then, so I'll sit down and put the easel on the table so that the kids can see me working. And Rob has done a great job of helping our kids see the creative process of goes into building a website and the process that goes into recording a podcast and how to edit the audio of a podcast.
Right. I've been intentional about showing that to the kids. I was editing some audio and I called both of them in and showed them what it looked like and what that meant. I talked to our 8-year-old pretty extensively about my process of writing the book and showed him the book. You know, I mean, it was published 5 years ago when he was 3. So he wasn't really around or he wasn't really cognizant of what was going on. But now I said, yeah, this is what we do in our family. I said, this is what we do. Like we write books, you know, and it's just an expectation. Like in some families, I think, and in my family growing up, it was like, it's an expectation you're going to college. That's just what's going to happen. And in our family, I think that the college topic is up for discussion, but writing a book, I just told him, yep, you're going to write books. And, you know, we'll see. I don't want to put undue pressure, right? Certainly don't want to be the family who like, you must be a doctor or a lawyer and is really pounding on it. But he took to it really well. And I can see that it's kind of a natural fit when it's just an expectation.
And what we want to teach is their own sense of using their abilities to support themselves. I'm getting a little into number 2, self-reliance, so I won't say too much about it. But this understanding that our kids do have, all children do have really valuable things to contribute to a household and the world around them. And if we can help them foster their ideas, channel their ideas, use their skills in ways that bring some kind of financial benefit or some other kind of benefit, then that's a great lesson to learn when you're young. Another thing that we have done to support creativity is to be really careful about what kinds of toys come into their lives. We try to choose toys that foster creativity and building the traditional Legos and blocks. We also have loved having snap circuits. We have a big box of costumes that our kids regularly wear, you know, out to church and the grocery store. Child-friendly digital cameras that are easy for the kids to use and mess around with. Chemistry sets, cooking sets, things that encourage making rather than character-based toys that are based on like a movie or a cartoon. Not that we're opposed to movies and cartoons, but the sense in which those characters tend to play out a written script, and we like to give our kids sort of script-free toys.
That's an interesting one because I grew up playing, you know, with G.I. Joes and Transformers, and it was all cartoon based. And so you had mentioned to me that you didn't love the Disney stuff and you know, whatever the TV show stuff coming into the house. And I didn't really realize that early on what that would mean. But now that I've noticed it, I've noticed there's just a lot of crappy toys in those genres. Like there's a lot of cheap plastic, and it's stuff that is just like you said, it doesn't necessarily foster creativity. And I found that the more intentional I am about it and about instead of looking to buy something they can play with, but looking to buy something that they can build and then play with, there's a lot of options. I'm a big fan of Tinker Crate and Kiwi Crate, which is you can buy one-offs, but you can also do a monthly subscription. And you basically get, it depends on the age. The Kiwi's for the little guys and the Tinker's for a little older. But you kind of get like a little science kit or something to build and learn from. And it comes with a nice book each month. And if you have the means, that's the kind of stuff that I look at. I'm also on Kickstarter a lot. And I've bought both books of like, we call them color cut and glues, but they're basically like paper craft or paper toys is what they're called. And you can build robots and all kinds of stuff. And our 8-year-old will spend hours just, you know, pulling those apart and constructing these things out of paper, these little characters that, you know, compared to he could be in there playing an Xbox or a Wii or something, but he's not. He's actually like building something out of paper and he's fascinated by it. And it's really cool. And that's something I want to invest in him early and like have it as a value of his that like building things is very interesting. And hopefully long term, it remains something that drives him to continue creating.
So it's been our pleasure and our privilege to expose our children to lots of different kinds of creativity, to digital technology and technical creativity, as well as fine art and different kinds of music. And we have just chosen to invest our time and our money in things that we believe inspire creativity or support their innate creative abilities. We're hoping that that will translate to them having a deep respect for their own creative capacity, and that when they're wondering if something can be done or how to solve a problem, they'll have this deep sense that if they sort of tinker and play around with it long enough, that yes, they're capable of making and doing lots of things.
So the second point we want to cover, that kind of wraps up creativity. Second one is self-reliance. And I think of this as teaching your child that they don't need to rely on someone else. Like, they don't need someone to give them permission to do something. They don't need someone to give them permission to have a job, permission to write a script, permission to make a song, permission to make a movie. Like, they should go out and do it on their own. And I mean, the idea here is that entrepreneurs support themselves with ingenuity and self-reliance rather than trading hours for dollars. There's no boss to sign your paycheck when you're on your own. And frankly, it's the ultimate act of self-reliance. So that's something we're trying to instill in them early.
There's a Russian psychologist named Lev Vygotsky who talks about this concept of scaffolding. And that is the sense in which a child's caregivers are supporting the child only up to the point that the child really needs it, so that the child is given space and freedom to do the maximum amount for themselves. The parent or the caregiver stands in the gap where the child's development and abilities can no longer be totally self-sufficient. So this scaffolding looks really different for a 4-year-old than an 8-year-old, than a 12-year-old, than a 16-year-old. So you're tailoring what you're encouraging in your children to their developmental level and to how well you know your children. So part of self-reliance is scaffolding well, standing just in the spot where they need you, but not hovering, not being a helicopter parent, and not standing so far back that they feel unsupported or afraid or, you know, not protected. Part of figuring out how to scaffold well is really knowing your kids. You know, there's no way around just spending a lot of time with them and figuring out who they are and what they're good at, what they're scared of. But there are lots of ways to encourage kids to do things for themselves. One of the simple ways is helping kids learn how to interact with other adults. So at a restaurant, helping them learn to order for themselves and to ask for things that they need, to talk to the librarian, supporting as early as is reasonable or possible their own ability to interact with the world in a safe but an empowered way.
I think another way is letting kids contribute, even in ways, you know, that may not feel like they're necessarily ready, but certainly helping in the kitchen, helping with dinner, helping put dishes away. We had our 8-year-old, when he was 4 or 5, he started doing, at least starting his laundry. He would put it in and then he would put the soap in and start it. And from there, you know, one of us had to help. But that kind of, having that kind of confidence in your kid's ability to do it, it gives them the confidence that they can do it as well.
I was sitting at a dinner, I think after MicroConf, with Nathan Berry, and I was asking him a little bit about his childhood because, you know, I'm a psychologist and I'm really curious about that kind of thing. One of the things that he mentioned is that his mom or his family didn't give him an allowance. And so if he wanted something, he had to figure out ways of earning money, whether that was raking leaves for neighbors or becoming quite creative in his own self-reliance. And unfortunately for our son, after that conversation with Nathan, I came home and said, look, allowance is gone. You're kind of on your own for the toy budget, but we are willing to help support you and invest in you if you have some good ideas. So that's where the book came from, is our son's desire to buy this ginormous, really expensive Lego set, and us saying, well, you're going to have to earn that. Helping kids understand that things aren't for free, but that they do have some ability to earn money that they want. As an aside, I think there's so much benefit to talking to kids about money and helping them understand saving and giving and spending really early on. So we're deep in those conversations with our 4-year-old already.
Right. We have, they each have piggy banks with multiple slots, right? And one's labeled save and one's invest and one's give and then one is spend. And I wanted to come back to, you know, building the financial resourcefulness with our eight-year-old. That was also when we went to Europe a couple years ago for MicroConf Europe. We encouraged him to busk. I think we suggested that he might do it. And he was this little six-year-old with a cello and he was playing Bach or whatever, Mozart, you know.
No, honey, he was playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
All right, but he was playing some cool stuff. But he was up, you know, on the Charles Bridge in Prague and he made more money than he had ever seen. You know, in 30 minutes, he did very well for himself. And he was encouraged by that. And I could see his eyes light up with the realization of, I can do this. And I remember feeling like that when I was a kid, whether, you know, when I was eight years old, I learned to program. And that there was a light in my eyes about that, like, wow, I can do this. And then as I got older, I started selling things, you know, comic books and candy in school. And that was a flash for me of like, this is what I'm going to do, right? And I can look back at those formative moments and realize they shaped who I am today. And that's what we're talking about here with scaffolding.
Helping encourage that spark. So part of being self-reliant, of course, is believing in your own ability to do things. And I think the thing that we're trying to communicate to our children is that their abilities exist now. They don't have to wait for the degree. They don't have to wait for the funding. They don't have to wait till they're 30. They can do a lot now.
Yeah, it's that don't ask for permission. I tell them that all the time. I really want to instill, like, you should, if you want to write a book, you should not wait for a publisher to give you permission. If you want to write a song, you should not wait for a record company to give you permission. And one day our eight-year-old came up and said, when I'm older, I want to make a movie about Bone, which is a comic book. And I said, why when you get older? Like, forget that. And so we bought a stop motion video camera for $30. You know, it's a USB camera that plugs into your laptop. And he and I spent 3 hours one Saturday morning with clay mocking up these things. And we recorded a voiceover, he and I, which again, it's free software, Audacity. He and I got on the mic. He scripted it out. We recorded it. Very poorly. We're not professional voice actors. And then we just overlaid it using this $30 software and the camera. And of course, it's not a professional thing, but it was an amazing experience. And it was another one of those that it frankly taught he and I that we both could do that because I had never made a stop motion video. But my guess is he will remember that. Like in 20 years, I bet he'll remember the day that we made that. And it, you know, even if he makes more in the future or never makes another one, I bet he'll keep that recording around and it'll remind him of things that he was taught as a kid.
And that's a really nice example of scaffolding, of a kid having an idea, a lot of creativity, and a clear vision of what he wanted to do, but needing the specific technical help to get it done. Self-reliant kids are capable kids. They're kids that believe in their own abilities. They're confident kids. And generally, they're happy kids. So whether or not our kids go on to be entrepreneurs in the traditional sense, we're hoping that that sense of self-reliance that they are hopefully taking from their childhood will serve them well in whatever they do.
So those are the first two aspects of raising entrepreneurial kids. That's creativity and self-reliance. The third one of four that we're going to cover today is problem solving. And we have several examples in here and things that we've done. The one I want to kick off with is the one that I enjoy the most, which is games. I scour Kickstarter for new games that are coming out that are appropriate for our 4 or 8 year old, or if I think we can all play together. What I like about this is it gives me an excuse to sit down and do something interesting with them. And what's happened is we've played so many games now that they're actually getting really good at just figuring it out. Like figuring out how to play a game is a skill on its own. And then once you know how to play a game, figuring out how to be better at it. And I love building these skills so early on. I buy a lot of cooperative games so that we can play together as a team when needed to not always foster competition. There's a really good game called Castle Panic that the younger one is able to play. Pandemic, Flashpoint, Forbidden Island, and Forbidden Desert. I mean, those are all games that I'd recommend if you have kids that are, you know, interested in at all in playing games. And then there's the competitive one. There's a new card game coming out every couple of weeks on Kickstarter, and I buy a lot of them because I love that it teaches them that things are not static, right? When I was young, I played the same three games for a few years, and you just kind of, you never have to learn new rules. You don't have to adjust. You definitely have to play strategy and have the ability to problem solve, but I think having that second dimension of having new games and having to pick them up, as well as then becoming good at them, I think is pretty valuable.
Jean Piaget was a French psychologist who described children as little scientists. And before Piaget's work, we really didn't respect very much about what was happening in kids' brains. But Piaget outlined these steps of cognitive development and talked about how kids' brains are really active. And in fact, they are often using the scientific method, even as infants. What happens if I kick that mobile? Oh, it shakes. If I do it again, will it shake again? They're running little experiments all the time. And so when we think about kids as scientists, as people who are always using a hypothesis, testing it, and looking at the results, they are so good at problem solving if we can continue to encourage and facilitate those problem solving strategies. And games, of course, are a fantastic way to do that. More broadly in our lives, we try to give our kids the space to solve their own problems. And then when we need to, we explicitly teach them how to break a problem into smaller parts. So intentionally teaching problem-solving strategies and follow-through. The games are a great way to do that. But you can also do that in thinking about how to organize a big homework assignment. One of the things that we are trying to instill with game playing and real life problem solving is that it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to make mistakes. How do you learn from that mistake? You tried this strategy in this game today and it didn't work. Your brother won. So what might you do differently next time? Or you tried this strategy with this homework assignment and you didn't get it done on time, or it was really messy, or, you know, whatever it is. Figuring out how to then integrate that information and problem solved so that it will have a different outcome the next time.
Right, because you can't be a founder if you're always scared of having the wrong answer or making a misstep or making a mistake. And so learning to make a mistake gracefully, and whether they learn from that at this age, you know, it may or may not be intact. We're trying to teach that, but at least to know that you can fail and then pick yourself up, and that's okay. I think that's a pretty key point of being an entrepreneur.
And it's the pairing of problem solving and the possibility of failure, and that it not working out is as much a part of problem solving as it working out, as winning the game. So the last one that we want to talk about is perseverance. It's the stick-to-itiveness, never, ever, ever, ever give up. An entrepreneurial life requires you to hold on to your passion for a goal over a fairly long period of time, despite discouragement or despite evidence to the contrary.
Right. And that discouragement can come from failures you're having. It can come from people around you even. And that's an interesting lesson to try to teach, is like, listen to some people, but not others, because it, you know, kids think pretty black and white still at this age. So I think that may be something for when they get older.
The psychological concept here, which has gotten quite a lot of publicity lately, and there's a really great TED talk by Angela Duckworth. The concept that she talks about is grit, and it is this very thing, the passion for a goal, the connection to a goal over a long period of time. And this is one of those things that you do have to have developmentally relevant conversations about. Our four-year-old's ability to pursue a goal is much shorter than our eight-year-old's ability because of the way that their minds work and their developmental capacity. But some of the ways that we are trying to praise grit or instill grit is to specifically praise stick to it and focus. Above being smart or talented, you really stuck with that. You really tried hard. I can see how important this is to you and that you're willing to work hard for it. Those kinds of reinforcements and praise tend to be more supportive of grit and perseverance than the more fixed praises, which are, you're so smart.
Yeah, after reading that book, the big shift in my language was that either child will bring me something and say, hey, look at this, do you like it? And I will say, wow, that's great. Did you have fun making it? Did you enjoy making it? You know, and I'm very intentional about that now. And did you work hard at that? It looks like you worked hard on that, rather than saying, oh, you're so talented, right?
And I think the book you're referencing is Mindset by Carol Dweck, where she talks about the distinction between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. So grit and a growth mindset aren't exactly the same, but they're certainly related. A growth mindset being a deep belief in your own capacity to change and to grow over time, rather than a fixed mindset, which says that who I am right now in this moment is who I will always be. So I'm either smart or not smart. I'm either talented or not talented. The growth mindset says, I have the ability to learn. we really help our kids track progress over time. And the best example that I can think of is their music training. Both of our kids play instruments. And one of the things that we celebrate really regularly is once they have learned a new song, we'll say, wow, can you remember back to when you couldn't play this? Or wow, do you remember before you knew how to do this scale on the violin? Or in the case of our older son, on the cello. So we can, every time we sit down to practice instruments, we're tracking growth over time. Before you couldn't play that song, then you could play it a little bit, then you can play it a little better. Now you can play it awesome. Now you can play it fast. Now you can play it fast with alternative fingerings. You know, there's so much great measurement of time that comes with learning a very specific skill, or in this case, an instrument.
And the other example I can think of is with our four-year-old, I'm teaching him how to read. And we started with these level zero reading books and then level one, and he's halfway through the level twos. And I've been very cognizant of that. And his older brother pointed it out one day. And then every time I say, oh, look at all these books. They're so easy for you now. And look, you know, you couldn't read this a while ago, because he keeps saying, oh, I can't read. But it's like, no, you're way further along than you were 6 months ago when we started this journey.
And I think we all need that record of little successes to keep us going. I mean, I've seen you when you're launching an app or when you're working on Drip, the little tiny successes that you build on, like little stairs to climb up to the courage that gives you the big success. And that also helps with perseverance, right? Any little positive reinforcement along the way helps us feel like, okay, there's some validity to sticking to this. And we're trying to build that into our kids' experiences at this point.
The third way that you can encourage perseverance is to reinforce passion, right? It's when a kid gets excited about something, to help them see that it's something they can do, and to really bring them back to it. I think that at least our kids, I think a lot of kids have a tendency to kind of scatter and go and try to do 10 things. But I've been trying to encourage them to focus on a few things and be pretty good at it, and to reinforce the things that they're really passionate about.
I mean, one of the things that's so enjoyable about parenting is investigating and trying to figure out who your kid is and what makes them tick. I mean, I'm reminded every day that my kids are not me, that they are really different than me. They see the world differently. They're different, separate people, but yet they're so intimately connected to me that when I step back and really try to see them for who they are, what they love, what they're interested in, how they work, how their brains are functioning right now, it gives the space to really instill some of these things.
Every child's not going to be an entrepreneur, but I think having these skills is really valuable and will help them, even if they work a normal job their whole life, or go backpack Europe, or go live, you know, somewhere else. I mean, these are life skills that I think would be very helpful. I also wanted to say, I don't want to give the impression that we somehow have this magical existence where we're doing everything right and our kids are going to grow up to be perfect, because that's certainly not the case. I mean, we wrote this outline based on our ideal of what we want to do with our kids, but it's not necessarily something that we're able to live up to every day, always encouraging, you know, always reinforcing and all that. So there is room here to experiment and figure yourself out and basically do the best you can, because that's what we're doing too. So to recap, we talked about four principles that we're trying to teach our kids to raise them as entrepreneurs. The first one is to essentially make makers. It's to teach them creativity. The second one is to teach self-reliance. The third is problem solving. And the fourth is perseverance.
The outline for this podcast is based on a series of essays that I wrote about raising entrepreneurial kids. So if this is something that's interesting to you, sign up for our mailing list at zenfounder.com/kids. We will send you a copy of those original essays that go into some more detail and expansion about the ideas that we are talking about today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.